slapped his two hands together in prayer, and the sound of his hands clapping was like divine thunder that echoed through the cosmos. Zack's mind was filled with a shocking force in an instant, and he felt a connection to the universe he had never sensed before. All living things were part of a greater whole, all connected by karma and heaven's will. Was this the grand truth of the universe? Or was it the cultivation path of the winged monk sitting under the cherry tree? The feeling only lasted for a second, and when he looked around, he had returned to the solitary mountain peak while the monk was nowhere to be seen. Zack could sense that he, or rather the cherry tree, had transformed somehow from what the monk did. It still looked the same from the outside as far as Zack could see, but there was a tremendous power hiding within. A massive halo that looked like a setting sun suddenly exploded out from the tree as its branches started to violently shake. Buddhist hymns sang across the Badlands as the tree kept growing and transforming. It had just been a bit over 5 meters before, but it grew over 100 meters in an instant. Its appearance had also taken a drastic turn as its purple leaves were suddenly covered in golden fractals, while its trunk turned almost black with similar engravings. Its canopy stretched hundreds of meters in each direction, sheltering the area from the sweltering sun. The changes weren't over, though, as the roots kept growing downward along the hoodoo, their exuberant vitality transforming the arid rock as they descended toward the parched ground. First, it was simply moss that covered the sheer rock, but soon enough, even small trees and flowers forced their ways through the cracks, turning the rocky pillar into a living monument. The edges of the branches started to droop as they kept growing, and soon they had formed a dome with the pillar as a center. Outside was still the sand-blasted wastelands, but the area within the canopy was quickly turning into a pocket-sized paradise. Chapter 25. Faceless. The vision of the consecrated tree and its kingdom slowly faded as Zack returned to his body. Before he fell into the vision, his soul had been crumbling while his body was grievously wounded, but he realized his body was almost completely healed upon waking up. A vigorous energy was gathered at his remaining wounds, and he felt them close with enough efficacy to put most of his healing pills to shame. A thought struck Zack, and he surreptitiously opened his Tao menu, and, as expected, there was a new entry. Fragment of the Bodhi, early, all attributes, +10, endurance, +60, vitality, +80, intelligence, +15, wisdom, +50, effectiveness of vitality, +5%. The vision had actually managed to help him form the third Tao fragment, and the fragment of the Bodhi even had tremendous healing capabilities from the looks of it. However, it was his mind rather than his body that had been in a critical state, and Zack hurriedly looked inward while still maintaining his unmoving posture. Unearthing all the capabilities of his new fragment would have to wait. A vibrant emerald force surged through his soul, encompassing the splintered pieces of spiritual energy into a warm embrace. Most of his soul was already back together, and the remaining fractures were being mended with a speed visible to the naked eye. However, he noted with a frown that his soul wasn't uniform any longer. Whenever he had gazed at it before, it had looked like a translucent ball in his mind, and his ball had become slightly larger and more pristine after taking a dip in the pool of tranquility. However, now, it almost looked like some sort of tadpoles were swimming about in his soul, small fuzzy blotches on an otherwise clear backdrop. It was no doubt the remnant energies left from the splinter of Oblivion's rampage. Not only that, but it also seemed as though some of the alien energies had crammed themselves into the cracks of his soul, turning itself into some sort of mortar as the Prajna cherry healed him. Zack had no idea what this infiltration would result in, and it felt like this was the very thing that the miasmic fractals had defended against the past months. The Draugr lady's cage had managed to cleanse the energies for him before they merged with his soul. He didn't feel anything amiss or different at the moment, but he knew he couldn't trust those instincts. The splinter had manipulated him many times before, sometimes with him only realizing it after the fact. Seeing the situation almost made Zack want to leave the tower early and find someone who could create the second of his soul-strengthening arrays. He was losing miasmic fractals left and right, and it felt like things were spiraling out of control. However, he knew he couldn't give up now. He had paid a steep price to remain in contention, and he wasn't ready to exit now. The mentalist was pretty insane, but he had now transformed into his Draugr form. Reaching middle proficiency on Indomitable had allowed him to infuse the skill with the fragment of the coffin, and the two together should make him strong enough in case another mentalist lurked in the arena. As for anything else, he had immutable bulwark and his shield. Zack had initially turned his focus toward his soul, but he now tried to get a grip of the surroundings while maintaining the disguise of a corpse. The vision had clearly taken less than 5 minutes, as he would have been booted from the arena by now otherwise. He was still lying on the ground, with the still warm corpse of the woman who fractured his soul, and their combined blood had created a large pool that he was currently lying inside. The scene was pretty grisly, but that was a blessing in disguise, as he had at least been left alone. Zack tried to move a bit, but he realized he was still extremely weakened, even though the transformation to his Draugr form had ended. Perhaps it was due to the fact that his soul was still being pieced back together by the emerald glow. A lot of his organs had also been turned to mush by the stab from the assassin's spike, which might have left some hidden weakness even if he had been restored by the cherry and his new Tao fragment. Each second felt like an eternity as Zack waited for the reconstruction of his mind to finish. He really needed to fight someone, since he could be kicked out of the arena any second now due to inactivity. But Zack realized he should have been careful what he wished for, as he was suddenly shrouded by a shadow. A figure had appeared out of nowhere, a small, goblin-looking humanoid no more than a meter tall, and he bent over to rummage through the clothes of the dead woman next to Zack. There was actually someone bold enough to loot the corpses while battles raged all around them? Zack made sure to be completely unmoving, and he anxiously tried to urge his body to regain its strength. Zack didn't so much as blink when the thief started to rummage through his clothes, or even when he found the cosmos sack hidden within his robes. Anxiousness burned in his chest, but he finally felt a sense of completeness as his soul was finally whole again. Zack's hand snapped forward like a spear, and with the help of the fragment of axe, his hand became sharp enough to stab straight into the chest of the unsuspecting thief. The man looked one part confused and two parts horrified as his torso turned into shreds in an instant. Zack almost gaped in disbelief at the scene, but he quickly snatched back his cosmos sack in case it would be teleported out. But the man was deader than dead, and his upper torso slid off to the side while his legs crumpled. Zack looked down at his hand with some shock, not able to comprehend the terrifying burst of power he had unleashed. His jab had been infused with the fragment of the axe, but the effect was more chaotic and destructive than it should be. Was this the result of his soul being tainted? The situation was too chaotic to investigate at the moment, though, and Zack knew he would have to look into this after he left this level. He instead quickly rummaged through the mangled corpse, but he only found the spatial ring that seemed to have belonged to the mentalist before. As for the thief's own possessions, he could find none. There was not even a complimentary cosmos sack dropped by the system, making Zack snort with irritation as he got up to his feet. Maybe thieves got the same sort of pocket dimension skills like merchants did, effectively robbing Zack of his chance to loot another scion. However, he quickly realized his mistake and changed his face with thousand faces, bearing the painful transition. He didn't think the cultivators around him had the time to completely understand what had transpired here, but he didn't want the fact of his dual class to spread, even if these people were from completely different sectors. Luckily, he was completely drenched in blood and viscera, making it nigh impossible to match him going by clothes, either. Furthermore, he would soon be covered up in another layer of miasmic armor. The large shield that appeared on his arm would hopefully also make it even harder to connect to his human side. As for his axe, there wasn't much he could do about that. The people around him were far too dangerous for him to use hunger instead of his main weapon. He didn't even dare to swap out Varun's bite for a spare axe. A wide sweep proved that he was out of trouble for the moment, and Zack thanked the gods that there was no immediate threat. He had just killed a cultivator, which meant he had some breathing room before he needed to fight again, but the situation that he was met with was a bit odd. There were still roughly 30 people in the arena, but only a handful of battles still raged on. The others were simply looking at the others and up at the ladder. Quite a few were actually looking right at him as well, donning calculative expressions. Their discerning eyes were a bit hair-raising, but there was nothing he could do about it. He knew he wasn't strong enough to kill everyone who might have witnessed his transformation. Zack could only pretend nothing was wrong and hope that they'd chalk up the situation to some odd transformation skill. At least he wasn't jumped by the remaining warriors, which gave Zack a chance to look up at the ladder as well. A lot of changes had taken place in the ladder during his unconsciousness. Only the first three positions were completely unmoved, and it looked like they were content with the results as they leisurely looked around at the others. All of them had over 20 points, making it essentially impossible not to pass the trial, as long as they didn't get kicked for inactivity. The second and third positions actually seemed to be from the same clan, as they shared the same last name, but they seemed to have no intention of teaming up, judging by how far they stood from each other. Things generally seemed pretty civil, and Zack couldn't understand why some of the spectators didn't try to take advantage of the few people who were currently embroiled in life and death battles. Had the remaining elites agreed upon some code of conduct while he was out of it? Zack wasn't on the ladder, as expected, which wasn't surprising, as he had only defeated two people, one of which only provided 1 point. It was unlikely that the thief he'd just defeated was anything special, either, and he had probably defeated one opponent at best before deciding to loot rather than compete for the top 10 positions. The problem was deciding whom to target next. Picking one of the people on the ladder would guarantee a top 10 placement if he won, but the battles would no doubt be pretty rough. Fighting Iztain, who still sat on top of her miniature son, was a non-starter. But the other 9 were obviously no weaklings either, since only one of them was currently being attacked. The other option was taking on one or a few of the remaining spectators in hopes that his combined points would at least push him to the 10th spot. That tactic might end with him expending a lot of energy without anything to show for it, though. Those who still stood in the arena were no doubt the elites of elites, and taking out 2 of them to gather points was probably harder than just 1 person in the top 10. Zack soon enough made his choice and started moving, prompting most of the spectators to look over at him with vigilance. Zack ignored the gazes as a sea of miasma started to billow out around him, followed by the massive fractal bulwark that started to hover in front of him in case of a sneak attack. His body groaned and creaked as he activated Vanguard of Undeath next. Zack didn't summon his skeletal helpers this time around, though, as he wasn't too confident in their ability to help out in a place like this. Judging by the attacks he had seen, they would be ripped to shreds in no time unless he infused them with his Tao, and he would need his fragments for his other skills. He had a feeling that the skill would change in interesting ways as it leveled up, but for now he couldn't justify the cost of activating the Undying Legion. Instead, he stomped down on the ground and disappeared, and stomped down again the instant he appeared in front of a familiar figure. It was actually the masked man wielding a pitch-black spike, the guy who had almost killed him earlier. His pseudonym was Faceless Number 9, and he was currently holding the 7th position on the ladder with 13 points. Zack couldn't deny that part of his reasoning for choosing this man as a target was fueled by vengeance for getting his innards shredded. but there was also some logic to it. He had already seen some of the man's repertoire and weapon, whereas most of the top contenders were a mystery to him. Furthermore, judging from what Zack had witnessed, the man seemed to be an assassin-type character, which was the best match for his current form. He had already been forced to change race, and he wouldn't be able to swap back to his human form anytime soon. Finally, there were a couple of corpses around him, which would help fuel his miasmic reserves through fields of despair. "Wrong choice," the masked man grunted with an emotionless voice before he disappeared, and Zack's mind screamed of danger the next moment, prompting him to urgently block the back of his head with his shield. If Zack had been a fraction of a second slower, he would probably have died then and there, as the black spike slammed into Everlasting with enough force to make Zack stumble forward. The sturdy shield was almost pierced straight through as well, though the fractals helped it to quickly regain its original form. Cold sweat ran down Zack's back, but he pushed aside his lingering fear as he quickly infused Death Wish with the fragment of the coffin before it was too late. The assassin snorted and disappeared the next moment, but even he seemed a bit shocked to find himself right in front of the massive barditch Zack wielded. A huge gash tore open the man's chest as the spectral projection stabbed into the back of Faceless Number 9. But he narrowly avoided any lethal wounds. Zack tisked in annoyance as he tried to swing his axe again, but it appeared that the assassin quickly learned from his mistake as he managed to move further away, somehow circumventing the taunting effect of Vanguard of Undeath. Zack sighed in regret when he saw that his gambit had failed. He had hoped to take down the man with a surprise strike, relying on the discombobulating effect from Vanguard of Undeath, but the masked warrior had dodged with almost impossible nimbleness. Zack did manage to leave a pretty nasty gash, but it wasn't enough to weaken him to any significant degree. It looked like Zack would have to do things the hard way, and billowing clouds of corrosive gas started to shroud the cage as the wails of 15 chains started to echo out of the cage, and a turquoise fractal formed in the sky. Chapter 26. A Break from the Monotony. Finally succeeding in upgrading Profane Seal during his climb was one of Zack's greatest gains while climbing the seventh floor. The upgrade added 5 more chains that extended from the top of 5 massive tombstones that had been added to the cage, and they would be sorely needed to catch the slippery assassin. The additional chains weren't the only benefit from the skill evolving. Dense scripts lit up with a cold aquamarine luster on top of the huge tombstones, and they formed a large fractal in the air that covered the entirety of the cage. It was a restrictive array, somewhat akin to the gravity array of the Zethia Pillhouse. It was another layer of restrictions that hindered anyone who had been caught in Zack's cage, along with fields of despair, the spectral chains, winds of decay, and the taunting effect of Vanguard of Undeath. The area within Profane Seal had become a real hellscape for the living. But the man caught in Zack's trap was no normal man, and he barely seemed troubled at all by the situation. Another warning of danger exploded in Zack's mind, this one even more urgent than before. He desperately moved Undying Bulwark to block his torso while infusing it with the fragment of the coffin. A sharp snap could be heard as the bulwark was pierced straight through as the pitch-black spike continued toward Zack's body. Almost all of the strike's momentum had been absorbed by the defensive skill, though, and the spike didn't even manage to pierce the next level of defense, the thick miasmic armor that covered Zack's whole body. Zack was ready to retaliate with his axe, but his brows rose in surprise when a spectral projection suddenly appeared on the other side of the cage. He pushed the confusion aside and infused the ghost with the fragment of the coffin just as it stabbed the man, creating another shallow wound that instantly started to fester. It was shocking how far the man had instantly moved after stabbing him, but the 15 chains of Profane Seal moved out to trap the assassin while Zack started to release torrential amounts of corrosive mists into the cage. He had failed in taking the man down with one strike, but Zack was still confident in whittling him down using his standard approach. The assassin tried striking Zack's vitals a few more times, but between immutable bulwark and his shield, he was able to escape unscathed, while adding more and more wounds with the help of Death Wish. Faceless number 9 was probably the fastest enemy he had ever fought, but his defense wasn't too impressive. Besides, the spectral projections were immutable. The masked warrior had unleashed flurries of stabs at them the moment they appeared, but the stabs went straight through their incorporeal bodies. They could only be blocked, which made them the perfect counter for people who relied on not getting hit. The assassin suddenly appeared far in the distance, and Zack frowned as he realized the assassin was up to something. Bleeding abscesses could be seen on various parts of his arms, whereas the wounds on his body were continuously leaking pus. A smaller spike suddenly appeared in his hand, but rather than attacking Zack, he stabbed himself in his heart. Zack's eyes widened in shock, witnessing what looked like a suicide. But he quickly realized that things were about to get rough. The man's muscles suddenly started to writhe and wriggle as black liquid reminiscent of his ichor poured out of his wounds before they coagulated, forming thick scabs around his wounds. The 9 closest chains were suddenly thrown away with enough force to cause cracks all along the links as the man stabbed forward with enough speed to become a blur, which gave the man another short breather. Impenetrable darkness spread through the cage the next moment, as the assassin unleashed some sort of domain, and any clue of the man's whereabouts was gone. The man's attuned energies had completely blended in with the surroundings, rendering cosmic gaze useless. Even his life force was hidden by the dome of darkness, rendering the unique vision brought by his Draugr race impotent. Just as Zack tried to figure out his next step, a sharp pain erupted in his left leg, and he realized a hole as wide as a quarter had appeared seemingly out of nowhere. The hole went straight through not only his armor, but his whole leg, and he felt his black ichor pouring out of the wound. He sensed that another spectral ghost had automatically appeared some distance away, but Zack didn't have time to imbue it before it struck the assassin. What had just happened? Another wound suddenly opened up, this time in his right arm. Zack frowned at the fact that he couldn't sense a thing before being struck, not a single warning from his danger sense that he was about to be attacked. This time, he managed to imbue the projection from Death Wish, but Zack was still a bit worried. Zack had already heard that there were methods to circumvent the special senses from luck, but this was the first time he had seen it to such a degree. Was this the hallmark of a top-tier assassin? This was a fighting style that was completely different compared to anything else Zack had witnessed during the Battle Royale. The man had no big avatars, and there were no flashy skills that emitted massive outbursts of energy. However, that didn't mean the man was weak, and it wasn't without reason that none of the spectators had dared to target him. Zack was sitting at over 300 effective luck, but he couldn't even begin to sense when the attacks were coming. Not only that, but his endurance and multiple layers of defense barely impeded the man, as 2 grisly wounds had appeared on his body without him impeding the strikes in the slightest. There was an extreme penetrative force between his jabs, and just 1 or 2 attacks might be enough to kill most people. The man had no doubt been able to effortlessly assassinate one guardian after another during his climb using this method, barely sustaining any wounds. However, a muted pang of danger suddenly erupted, and Zack hurriedly protected his head with his shield, safely blocking another strike aimed at his head. Zack nodded in understanding as he realized that his danger sense, at least, could sense lethal strikes. It meant that the darkness hadn't changed much. So Zack simply ordered the chains to flail about at random as he stood rooted in place, only focusing on staying alive and infusing the Death Wish with the fragment of the coffin. Finally, there was a break from the monotony. Iztane curiously looked at the weird cage formed from death-attuned energies, and the 2 fighters who were grinding each other down within. Luckily, she had been gifted the skill Sun God's Eyes by her uncle before entering the tower. Otherwise, she would have missed out on the melee due to the Red Hand Shroud. Not that the fight was anything impressive. The assassin from the Red Hand Society had actually been forced to infuse himself with their disgusting compound to keep fighting, whereas the Odd One was just unusually competent at taking a beating. He would no doubt be able to make a decent living as a sparring partner at one of her family's trial planets. She had been deeply disappointed that there wasn't anyone interesting in the arena after something interesting had finally happened in this dull tower climb. The two siblings from the primeval lake were pretty strong, but they were still not strong enough to force her hand, even if they joined forces. It was a shame that there was no one like their granduncle in their current generation. Then it would have truly been a clash of fates. She felt a bit bad about scorching a few unlucky people out of frustration, but then again, it could be seen as them lacking in fate by being spawned so close to her. After that, she let the others escape in time, apart from the despicable fellows who didn't respect the proper rules of conduct. Such people could burn for all she cared. But something interesting had finally happened. He seemed to think that no one had noticed his transformation, but everything that her son illuminated was within her domain. How could she not see what had happened? What kind of encounter would allow one to change between a human and a Draugr? More importantly, was he really human? It was extremely minute, but there was something odd hidden within that she had never encountered before. Something primordial. Mixing an ordinary human bloodline with the blood of higher beings was nothing unusual, as humans in general were extraordinarily average. Her own heritage was a prime example of that practice. But the odd thing was that her own bloodline felt some pressure from that man, which she had never encountered before. At least not against someone in her own grade who hadn't undergone their bloodline evolutions yet. That wasn't the only odd thing, and she couldn't help herself from being engrossed as she replayed the events in her mind. It didn't make sense. She saw him almost dying from his soul shattering, then somehow being saved by an errant arrow that had forced the Red Hand Assassin to move away. He then proceeded to eat a natural treasure that somehow changed its provenance mid-consumption, and finally recovered over 2 minutes. All without being targeted or hit at all as battles raged all around him. It was as though his surroundings had been shifted to a separate dimension. Was it dumb luck? Or accumulated luck? She didn't think that even she would be that lucky if put in such a situation. And she had over 200 luck and multiple fate-augmenting treasures. So Iz felt like a child who had found an odd, colorful bug in their family's garden, and her eyes followed the bulky man as he tried to take down a much more skilled opponent by sheer stubbornness. The man from the Red Hand Society was clearly one of their stronger cadets, likely someone who had survived the hellish training on one of their induction planets. Anyone who survived long enough to enter the society from one of those hellholes was an emotionless murderer who had solidified their path with a million corpses. He kept opening up one wound after another on the Draugr, who was leaking like a sieve by this point. He was using some nurturing Tao fragment from the looks of it, but his control of the fragment was atrocious. Why didn't he form proper Tao arrays on the wounds? The humanoid cockroach tried again and again to catch his opponent with his axe and the 15 chains that flailed about in the cage, but he didn't seem to possess any means to pierce through the darkness of the shroud. The assassin effortlessly moved back and forth between the attacks, bursting forward with one stab after another. Of course, the assassin was facing his own troubles as well. He was starting to look disfigured from the wounds of the retaliatory strikes. Absolute strikes were the worst to people like him. If it were her, she could have simply formed a shield of flames to block out any such attempts. But the assassin seemed to follow a much more extreme path, lacking such tools. He had quickly expended the few defensive treasures in his arsenal, and since talismans and arrays didn't work here, he had to endure 1,000 little pinpricks infused with a corrosive Tao fragment. However, the fragments the Draugr used were just early stage, a far cry from her 3 middle fragments that empowered each other. Even worse, he seemed unable to properly coordinate them into something more potent. Should she kill the assassin to make sure that the colorful bug didn't die? She had already moved a flame tendril to stand ready beneath the miasmic cage. A quick poke and the struggle would be over. But that would be a bit rude, not to mention somewhat embarrassing, to butt in on a fight after having killed a few people for that kind of transgression. She guessed she would have to leave it up to fate. Finally, it seemed like the assassin had had enough, and he launched a rapid succession of furious stabs as he moved quickly enough to make it hard even for Iz to follow. But the armored warrior was like an impenetrable fortress, enduring the strikes he could endure, and blocking those he could not. The failed assault was followed by an attempt at escape, and the assassin first tried to teleport out of the miasmic cage, but he was completely unable to leave, and another special warrior attacked him the moment he tried to slip through the cracks. A furious assault on one of the towers was only met with a storm of ghosts as well, it seemed. The moment the assassin realized that both killing the man and escaping was impossible, he instead reached down and crushed the token on his belt. Ever the pragmatists, the assassins. The Red Hand assassin disappeared in a flash, taking the domain with him. The Draugr stumbled around for a few seconds, seemingly unaware that he had actually won. The 15 spectral chains kept flailing back and forth inside the cage as he stood hunched over, ready to eat another stab. Only after 20 seconds passed did the man have enough presence of mind to look up at the sky. He had appeared in the 6th spot, meaning that the battle was won. Only then did he slowly start to move toward the cosmos sack, leaving a trail of black goop in his wake. Iz was unsure what to do. The man was very interesting, but he was some random person from another part of the universe. Was there any point in trying to look into his secrets? There were a lot of oddities on his body, but who didn't have a secret or two? But it was interesting. Of course, there was one easy way to test if they had some connection of fate. She instructed Uyurik to get to work, and Iz's bloodline familiar formed another seal as she channeled a piece of her world's end into the array. Someone who was dead obviously couldn't carry any fate or secrets worth fretting over. Chapter 27. Fate. Zack felt like a block of Swiss cheese as he desperately rotated his new fragment while eating healing pills like they were candy. Whatever that assassin had infused himself with had made him disgustingly durable, and Zack couldn't believe how many Tao-infused strikes it took to force him to give in. Scabs had covered almost every part of the man's blackened body, and he'd looked more like an undead compared to Zack himself by the end. It appeared that whatever the black spike infused into the man's body had forcibly kept the assassin going while instantly patching up his accumulating wounds. But the layered corrosive effects had finally proven too much, forcing the man to crush his token. The encounter had been too close for comfort, though, and Zack wasn't sure whether he would have been able to endure if it weren't for his new Tao fragment that kept patching up his lacerated body. Zack shook his head as he arduously moved over to the spot where the assassin had left the arena and bent over to pick up the cosmos sack he'd left behind. A glance at the sky confirmed that he was pretty much safe from elimination at this point. He was in 6th place on the ladder with 18 points. He had a shot at reaching even higher since there was only a 3-point difference between the 4th and his spot, but he wasn't sure his body would be able to take it. He had barely defeated the assassin, even though his class was a direct counter, and he was running low on miasma due to the massive loss of I-Corps. He did pop a soldier pill to restore some of his reserves, but running low on miasma wasn't the only issue. Zack looked down at Everlasting with a sigh. The shield currently had multiple holes after getting brutalized during the fight. The fractals of the shield were thankfully still intact, and the holes were slowly closing themselves by the automatic repair function. However, its structural integrity was breached, and the weakness would transfer over to immutable bulwark as well, meaning his defenses were compromised by at least half until the shield had restored itself. There was also the issue of the splinter. The side effects of having one soul filled with the splinter's corrosion had started to make itself known during the latter half of the fight. A smoldering fury had started to build as he got increasingly wounded, and it was a strain to stay in place. His subconscious had been screaming at him to destroy everything, to bravely rush forward and crush everything with the axe in his hand. That was obviously lunacy, though, as he couldn't even see his own hand in front of him, much less his target flitting about in the darkness domain. The impulses had luckily calmed down the moment the battle ended, and Zack felt like himself again after just 10 seconds. But it proved that prolonged battles could turn a bit iffy in the short term. Any thought of retreat had been long thrown out of his mind as he fought, and he would rather have died than given up in the heat of the moment, even though he was just inside a trial. That fact alone made Zack leery about entering another battle. Getting a higher position would probably improve his reward, if past experience was any indication, but he wasn't ready to die just to get a better placement. But it might not be up to him if he entered another battle, but rather the splinter. All this combined made Zack unwilling to fight until getting a better handle on his situation. In fact, he wanted to keep Profane Seal active until the trial ended as a protective measure, but he felt that he was losing control over the skill, meaning that it was reaching its limits of how long it could stay active. He could only reluctantly release the skill as he tried to appear as intimidating as possible to avoid getting attacked the moment he was exposed. Thankfully, his miasmic armor from Vanguard of Undeath automatically repaired itself, and it should be impossible to see all the wounds covering his body. Along with the swirling clouds of his Field of Despair and Winds of Decay, he should look just as menacing as when he was at full strength. However, not even a second had passed after the cage went down before alarm bells once again went off in his mind, and he saw a massive pillar of fire bearing down at him with terrifying momentum. He barely had time to adjust immutable bulwark before the beam was upon him, and it suddenly felt like he was being burned alive. Flames burst out in all directions as the attack slammed into the bulwark, and the fractal shield only managed to block parts of the shocking amount of energies before the excess energy went around its edges. Zack was soon enough trapped within a corridor of flames, barely holding on. He was slowly being pushed back as Everlasting started to lose its shape from the heat. Each second felt like an eternity as Zack could only focus on holding on. He had seen what had happened to the Beastkin warrior by just getting grazed by a beam, just like this one, and he couldn't let it hit him. His defensive fragments and sturdy constitution might be able to handle the flames, but he wouldn't bet his life on it. Zack's whole body was shaking from the strain, and much of the miasma he had just restored with his soldier pill had been expended as his wounds reopened. Finally, he wasn't able to hold any longer. Perhaps if he had been in peak condition, he would be able to withstand such an attack multiple times, but now there was simply no way. The shield cracked, and Zack reached down toward his token to escape before it was too late. But no flames waited behind the crumbled bulwark, only the vast sky. Just a few errant sparks remained, but Zack barely dodged them by ungracefully frog-leaping forward. It looked like he wouldn't share the same fate as the poor Beastkin woman, at least. But a furious rage just as potent as the flames had erupted in his mind from the brush with death. His vision turned a bit jagged and monochromatic as he glared at the woman sitting atop the sun. The air twisted and turned around him as he lifted his barditch, and his arm swelled from a massive infusion of miasma from unholy strike. Blood would be repaid with blood. Only at the last second did he manage to wrest back control of his mind, and he was shocked at what he had almost done. He had just been about to infuse his weapon with the fragment of the axe before throwing it at Iztain. Not even mentioning if such a crude attack would ever reach her before Varun was turned into ash, just what was he thinking? That crazy powerful cultivator was the last person he should antagonize, especially considering she only seemed intent on attacking once, judging by her demeanor. The power in his arm still needed a release, though, and a powerful slam into the ground caused a massive rift that stretched 50 meters forward as the miasmic mists swirled around him. Zack quickly turned back toward the scorching sun afterward as he readied another undying bulwark just in case. The two stared at each other for a few seconds, until Iztain finally broke eye contact as she turned to the other participants, who looked at the spectacle with confusion and trepidation.
"This has gone on long enough. Start fighting right now, or leave if you're not in the top 10," the woman said with a bored voice before she turned and pointed at Zack. "Not him, though. We are connected by fate."
Her eyes once again turned toward him, and Zack felt like she was looking at an interesting curiosity. Had she witnessed his transformation and wanted to dissect him like he had been warned by his master? Warning bells went off in Zack's mind when he saw her look, and he slowly started to back away even further from her. Thankfully, she didn't seem to have any interest in attacking him again, and instead chose to spectate the 6 battles that erupted as a direct result of her words. More than half of the remaining warriors had targeted someone else, whereas the rest crushed their tokens with downcast expressions. No one did target Zack, though, and he didn't make any moves either. He had already been hesitant to fight anymore due to his wounds, and gaining the attention of that pyromancer didn't allow him to split his attention. He needed to be alert enough to counter anything that she had planned, or at least flee fast enough before being burned alive. The battles took less than 2 minutes, and Zack was pushed down to the 8th position in the end, as 2 warriors, one unranked and the other the previous 10th spot holder, managed to accumulate enough points to pass him. The moment the fighting was over, 10 pillars of light emerged, and Zack realized that one of them was placed on top of the platform where he'd started out. The others realized what was going on, and over half the winners rushed toward their respective platforms as fast as their legs could carry them, none of them interested in staying behind. There was nothing to gain by staying in the arena, but everything could be lost if Iztain decided to burn everything to the ground. Only the 2 cultivators from the same family slowly walked toward their respective teleporters, after bowing toward Iztain, receiving a small nod in return. Everyone seemed loath to stay in the arena, but perhaps no one was as motivated to flee as Zack himself. He couldn't care less what fate the insanely powerful pyromancer thought she had with him. His only interest was getting to the teleporter. But horror gripped his heart as the bored voice echoed out behind him.
"Wait, Mr. Bug,"
Iztain said, and Zack's eyes widened with alarm when he saw that the scorching sun transformed into a massive river that snaked toward him. There was no way he would wait to see what this maniac had in store, especially after she actually referred to him as a bug, even though his name was on full display in the ladder. He redoubled his efforts at reaching the teleporter, but he was forced to stop in his tracks when a towering wall of flames rose to block his path. If it had been someone else's flames, he would have simply run straight through, but he didn't dare to do something so foolhardy here. He quickly launched a wide swipe with unholy strike, empowered with the fragment of the axe, but the strike was quickly swallowed up by the wall of flames like a pebble in a lake. Zack turned around and saw that the girl was almost upon him, and his instincts screamed at him to get out as he saw a white flame forming above her hand. He desperately tried to think of some way out, but he could only come up with one solution. His miasmic armor dissipated into a gust of smoke as he shrank back to his normal size, and he stabbed his shoulders with two daggers as he ran straight toward the wall of flames. A massive surge of mental energy pushed into the two fractals of cyclic strike, and Zack felt a mix of fear and anticipation when the two fragments actually fused into a bronze flash. A roar echoed out across the arena as he punched the wall of flames with all he had, and a 5-meter-wide void was created as the bronze spark sprang out of his fist and erupted in a fierce implosion that simply deleted the flames barring his path. Zack was flush with elation at finally being able to use the bronze flash for something useful, but he had no time to think about that now as he jumped straight toward the teleporter that was just 20 meters away. He glanced back in midair just in case, only to see that Iztain was only 10 meters away. She donned an incredulous expression as she watched Zack soar toward the teleportation array, but Zack was unclear whether it was due to his incredibly stupid technique or because her wall got breached. However, her expression soon turned thoughtful as she pushed two fingers into the white-hot flames she had conjured. A small glob of flames covered in dense fractals was quickly extracted, and Zack cursed from surprise when she flicked it toward him with a small smile. He quickly moved his bulkward and infused it with the fragment of the coffin as he braced for impact, but his defenses weren't enough. The small flame shot straight through immutable bulwark and hit him in an instant. The stench of burned flesh spread out in an instant as a burn mark as large as a fist appeared on his chest. Zack growled with pain as he quickly applied the fragment of the Bodhi on the wound, but he was relieved to see that the flames seemed unable to spread as they had with the beastkin. It still hurt like hell, and he shot a furious look at the girl who had stopped in her tracks.
"Goddamn lunatic!"
Zack spat through gritted teeth as he disappeared through the teleporter. Chapter 28. Dreams. Hot, hot flames and darkness. Billy didn't like it. Billy tried to get away, but it kept following wherever he went. But suddenly, the hot darkness was gone, and Billy saw he was on the mountain again.
"You were having a nightmare," the statue said.
"Billy told you. Billy won't listen to you, statue man."
Billy snorted with disdain as he glared at the 20-meter statue.
"Try to trick Billy that Billy is not human."
The statue man loudly groaned in response. Did he finally realize that Billy was too smart to be tricked?
"Remember, I only told you that you have titanic blood due to your ancestry. It has simply awoken in you, pushing your mundane human bloodline aside," Statue Man said, using a soft voice like a woman. "You are a descendant of mine. Remember how I awakened your bloodline transformation?"
"Keep trying to trick Billy with big words,"
Billy muttered as he started to turn over rocks and rip up bushes.
"What are you doing now?"
the statue finally said after some silence.
"Billy is looking for a way out. You think you can trap Billy here? Billy is a genius. Alien Man said so himself. Billy will find the door,"
Billy muttered as he started digging a hole.
"Look, listen, I am not trapping you, remember? I simply created this world so that I can guide you in your dreams. Isn't it working? Aren't you stronger after waking up?"
the voice said with a sigh.
"Stupid statue. Everyone feels better after a good night's sleep. Mama always says so."
Billy snorted as he shot another despising glare at the huge statue looking like a human. The statue was a bit annoying, even if it looked almost as handsome as Billy himself. Statue Man had big muscles like Billy, and he held a really big hammer that looked good for Thwonkin. But Statue Man was always trying to trick Billy, so Billy had tried to break it. But the stone was very hard, Even Billy couldn't thwonk it to make it go quiet. Billy did manage to drag it away once, but the next night it was right back. But Billy would one day find a way to thwonk it for good. The trouble was that Billy always forgot about this stupid mountain and Statue Man when waking up. Statue Man said that it was to protect him from enemy forces, but Billy believed that it was just so that Thea wouldn't help Billy figure out a way to thwonk him. Thea was almost as smart as Billy, and she had a lot of books. Billy bet that at least one book could tell him how to make a statue shut up. Mama always said that books had all kinds of smart things written down.
"Lord help this child," Statue Man groaned.
"Billy is an adult,"
Billy muttered in response.
"Never mind," the statue sighed. "What happened to you? You have pretty serious wounds. I can only help so much through this dreamscape."
"Are you peeping at Billy? Mama said that peeping toms get no dessert,"
Billy said with a scowl.
"We are connected through our bloodline. I can tell without peeping," Statue Man said.
Billy hesitated for a bit, but he eventually decided to tell Statue Man what had happened. Statue Man was a bit stupid and a liar, but he had helped Billy a few times with getting better at thwonkin'.
"Bad guys are attacking Billy's friend's town while he is away. Billy came to help. Their boats had a lot of fire,"
Billy muttered before his face lit up with glee.
"But Billy thwonked one of their boats, and now they're zombies and lizard men are fish poop."
"Good. A real man is true to his brethren and ruthless to his enemies," Statue Man roared. "But your enemies are pretty strong. Why don't you draw the array I imparted to you, and I'll—"
"Billy won't fall for your tricks,"
Billy cut off Statue Man.
"Billy knows that Statue Man wants to use the drawing to escape Billy's dreams."
"Aye, this child's bloodline might actually be too pure for his own good. The other emperors would laugh if they heard how hard it was to get a disciple."
"What did you find out?"
Adriel asked as he gazed down at the ocean waves.
"It was Thea Marshall and Thwonkin' Billy," the ghost answered with a hollow voice. "They managed to sink one of the advance vessels before being forced to retreat by the bishop. They were both wounded in the conflict and will likely not be able to fight for a week or two."
Adriel nodded with satisfaction. Those two weren't a real threat to his plans, but they had been a constant annoyance for a few months now, like two flies who refused to go away. It was good to hear that they had finally been brought to justice, and he knew that Crisco would perform a rite of thanks to the founders upon hearing the news. Besides, it was good news for another reason. Neither Super Brother Man nor the two incursion leaders who chose to join his banner had participated in any of the raids that tried to impede their progress. The human champion was truly held up somehow, perhaps even sent off-world by the ruthless heavens. If they hadn't captured a couple of the living to gain access to their ladders, Adriel would have thought that the man was wounded after enduring the tribulation. But he was clearly still at level 75, proving he hadn't taken that step just yet.
"Our soldiers?" Adriel asked.
"Less than 5% survived from the vessel," the scout reported. "There are extremely bloodthirsty beasts in the waters. Some of them seem to be controlled by the powerful contracted cephalopod."
"What about the arrays on the ship?"
Adriel asked, cutting to the heart of the matter.
"We managed to recover them,"
the ghost nodded.
"Good,"
Adriel sighed with relief. Losing a few hundred revenants born on a world with such abundant origin dough was regrettable. These were among the first to awaken, and they would no doubt have become strong subordinates. but the mission could still be considered a win as long as they managed to plant the arrays. The alignment would commence in 5 days, and as long as they managed to trap Super Brotherman on his island kingdom until then, he would have won. The brains of the zealots must have been scorched by their flames, as they still believed that they could actually kill the target in the middle of his own kingdom. Adriel knew better. He was happy to let them fight it out, as he placed the spatial locks down. Of course, if that was only what was needed to be done, he wouldn't have needed to send his strongest clones to this remote corner of the world. He had a secret mission to fulfill, handed to him straight from his master's master. Who would have thought that some great powerhouse from the Empire Heartlands was touring their remote kingdom? With the distances involved, there might not be a single guest for tens of thousands of years, and usually not people with this kind of clout. More importantly, the great master had a treasured disciple who craved unique bodies for experimentation, preferably ones leaning toward the three great arts. And didn't he have a prime body waiting for him here? Thankfully, his master had managed to hear about it and quickly contacted him. This was his shot at greatness. Between the contribution of aligning a world with such a unique mystic realm and gaining the favor of that great master, he might actually have a chance at gaining a teleportation token to the Heartlands. He had heard that treasures that could cause two forces to fight to the death in this remote sector were sold like they were worthless sticks of incense over there. Adriel had already promised the body to Harkon, but he would have to get out of that contract even if it meant killing his old friend. He could only pray that they had managed to keep the poison girl alive long enough that she hadn't decomposed or been cremated. His hollow eyes looked out across the waters, cursing the zealots for building such bulky vessels rather than the small skippers that their enemies used. They would long have reached the islands if they could move even half as fast as the ships the humans utilized. But they were so close that Adriel could taste it by now, and he could already sense markings left behind by Maul, even without the help of the tracking arrays. They would be there in less than a day, and without the human champion there, they might be able to completely conquer the town. It was time to make all his dreams come true.
You were right. He passed the 7th floor. Only took him something like 20 minutes, too,
Layara said with excitement, prompting Pretty to look over.
How did you know?
I had a feeling, Pretty said with a smile.
You know something? I can feel it, Layara said with a pout. I can't take it. Just look at the chaos below. My sister disciples will be green with envy when they hear of this spectacle. Our sector might never have seen anything like it.
Pretty Peak sighed as she looked down at the crowd that kept growing by the minute. 3/4 of the climb was over for Zack Piker, and he could be dropping out at any moment now that he had reached the 8th floor. One fight after another had erupted as the square was only so big, and forces fought for the opportunity to be closer to the array. Mr. Piker would be drowned in a deluge of attacks the moment he emerged from the teleporter, and everyone wanted to be the one to land the killing blow. Pretty felt some helplessness as she saw the commotion. She wasn't sure what she was supposed to do in this situation. The man had a minor connection to her uncle, but she couldn't be expected to deal with a mess of this magnitude, right?
What are you thinking about? Do you want to join? I am sure Prince Yorav would give some face and let you set up camp next to his array, Layara said. Might be a good chance to make a connection. He's pretty handsome, and less muscle-headed than his cultivation-maniac brother.
I told you I'm not joining, Pretty sighed.
Besides, Yorav has a Dao companion already. So what's wrong? Layara asked as she took out a bottle of wine. Zack Piker has a small connection to my family, and I'm not sure what to do, Pretty finally admitted, but regretted at the moment she saw her friend's exuberant expression.
I knew it!
Layara screamed with excitement.
Secret boyfriend, hiding him from your crazy grandpa?
What? Pretty snorted with a roll of her eyes. It's my cousin who knows him. Uncle Greatest sent Average on a training mission, and they met Zack Piker by chance. Mr. Piker beat the crap out of Average, and my uncle was impressed by his performance.
He's from the Albright Empire? But why haven't we heard of him before?
Layara asked with confusion. I'm not sure if he's actually from my empire or not. He was sent to an abandoned planet in the Red Zone for a quest by the system. I think my cousin was used as a prop for him, Pretty explained.
Well, Average is only 17. Beating him up shouldn't be too hard. He has barely started setting up his foundation.
Layara shrugged.
Well, my uncle said there's something miraculous about Mr. Piker,
Pretty said.
But he refused to say what when Dad asked.
Well, that's not surprising. He beat the 7th floor. There's no way he hasn't had some unique encounters,
Layara said.
So, what do you think I should do?
Pretty asked.
You can't stop what's going on down there, even if you team up with that mysterious Draugr,
Layara said as her eyes started to radiate with a white glow.
There are multiple arrays down there at the limit of what this place allows, and the powers are chaotic enough to indicate that there are at least a dozen offensive treasures in the mix.
So, he's doomed?
Pretty sighed.
It doesn't make sense that the system would create a scenario like this. We finally see a great genius emerge in this sector, only to have him die by the hands of 1,000 pieces of trash.
Well, perhaps things will turn into an all-out brawl, where the preparations are used on competing forces rather than on Mr. Piker.
Or perhaps he has concocted some sort of counter?
Who knows?
Layara said, though she looked less than enthused about Mr. Piker's chances.
But I think the system will only require him to survive for a short moment to consider it a pass.
Well, he's had almost 100 days to prepare, and hopefully he'll have found something that can assist him.
Pretty nodded.
Well, it doesn't hurt to get ready just in case,
Layara said thoughtfully as she adjusted her dress to show a bit more cleavage.
What are you thinking about now?
Pretty asked with exasperation.
Well, if he actually survives long enough for the quest to expire, wouldn't he become this sector's number one Prince Charming?
Layara said as she started applying some makeup to her already immaculate face.
This is a prime opportunity to snag both a dashing husband and an amazing seedling for our forces.
Chapter 29. Gains. 7th floor complete. Upgrading title. Choose reward. Evolution of Verun's Bite. Duplicity core upgrade to E-grade. Upgrade of Port Atwood to World Capital. Additional reward, 8th place. Limited title slots, +1. Peak F-grade, all attribute fruit.
Zack's pitch-black eyes went back and forth between the three choices, the pain and exhaustion almost completely blown away. Then again, the black dimension seemed to have some sort of suppressive effect on wounds, so he probably wouldn't be as chipper when he left this place. A quick look down at his chest proved that the crazy girl had left a burn mark that almost looked like a fractal, but the wound showed no signs of spreading, at least. However, that didn't provide much comfort, as there had obviously been something off about that piece of flame she had shot at him. His best guess was that she had formed some sort of karmic tie to him for some reason. Istane came from some top-tier force, though, and Zack hoped that the distance to his remote sector would prove too far away to make it worth tracking him down, if it was even possible, since she was just an F-grade cultivator. However, the encounter with the crazy flame girl wasn't enough to put a damper on his feelings at the moment. He had passed the 7th floor, a feat that only happened once every few millennia in a star sector with trillions of cultivators, and there were no two ways around it. These rewards were amazing. Better yet, they were clearly custom-made for himself, which was a first since he'd entered the tower.
The reward for clearing the sixth floor had been pretty great, too, but it was still something generalized, apart from the compatibility. Was it because he had cleared a high-tiered floor, or was it because there had been a special event? Even better, there was actually a bonus reward for reaching the eighth place, and it provided something he had never even heard of before. Getting a fourth slot for limited titles was an extremely powerful boon, and Zack started to understand why so many had been fighting tooth and nail, even to the point that some died. Getting another spot for limited titles wasn't as simple as having another title. If that was it, then Zack wouldn't have been so excited, since he already had 30 of them. Limited titles had never been too important for Zack until now, simply because he hadn't encountered any such opportunities so far. But Galau had properly described the roles of limited titles during their climb. The merchant had already confirmed that getting real titles would get harder and harder, and most people got almost 80% of their titles during the F grade. That was why some called normal titles foundational titles. They set the foundation for your entire cultivation journey. Limited titles were something that you could continuously improve, though, and there was almost an unlimited number of opportunities for such titles in the multiverse. They were the lure the system used to keep pulling cultivators into deadly trials and unexplored mystic realms, and they just kept getting better the more dangerous the trial was. One single limited title snatched from a deadly D-grade trial might be even better than the tower title he had worked for the past 70 days. Getting another limited title slot was essentially getting a 15-20% boost to your power, provided you could get a good title that provided efficiency. The reward might not be useful at the moment, but Zack would quickly be able to acquire a few limited titles after leaving Earth. As for the Scions who risked their lives, it was understandable as well. This was a reward that no amount of treasures, wealth, or guidance could provide, and they no doubt had a bunch of top-quality limited titles to choose from through their forces. Not only that, the system even threw in a small bonus in the form of an all-attribute fruit, which was equivalent to a pretty good low-tiered title. That was the most valuable of all the attribute fruits, even more so than luck fruits. Zack was extremely thankful that he hadn't given in to the fear in his heart that had told him to cut his losses after narrowly surviving his soul getting crushed. The rewards from this floor alone far eclipsed the rewards from the first six floors combined. It also made him wonder just what the others received. Take Iztain, for example. She was already strong to the point that it felt like she had somehow snuck inside the tower while being E-grade. Just what level would she reach after getting her individualized reward, plus whatever reward was awarded for the first spot? Did she get multiple limited title slots? Remembering the traumatizing encounter where he almost died made him think of something else, and he reluctantly turned his eyes away from the rewards. Zack wasn't quite ready to make his choice, so he first opened his status screen to check something, and just as expected, he had taken a huge step forward.
Name, Zachary Atwood. Level, 75. Class, F, Rare, Hatchet Man. Race, E, Human. Alignment, Earth, Port Atwood, Lord. Titles, Born for Carnage, Ultimate Reaper, Luck of the Draw, Giant's Bane, Disciple of David, Overpowered, Slayer of Leviathans, Adventurer, Demon Slayer 1, Full of Class, Rarified Being, Trailblazer, Child of Tao, The Big 500, Planetary Aegis, One Against Many, Butcher, Progenitor Noblesse, Duplicity Core, Apex Hunter, Heaven's Chosen, Scion of Tao, Omnidextrous, Eastern Trigram Hunt, First, Tyrannic Force, Achievement Hunter, The First Step, Promising Specialist, Tower of Eternity, 7th Floor, Heaven's Triumvirate. Limited Titles. Front Runner. Tao. Fragment of the Axe. Early. Fragment of the Coffin. Early. Fragment of the Bodhi. Early. Core, F, duplicity. Strength, 980. Increase, 75%. Efficiency, 163%. Dexterity, 498. Increase, 60%. Efficiency, 155%. Endurance, 1,282. Increase, 80%. Efficiency, 163%. Vitality, 673. Increase, 65%. Efficiency, 163%. Intelligence, 264. Increase, 60%. Efficiency, 155%. Wisdom, 386. Increase, 60%. Efficiency, 155%. Luck, 243. Increase, 80%. Efficiency, 155%. Free points, 0. Nexus coins, F, 6,830,543,287.
Zack stared with confusion at his attributes, unable to compute the changes for a few seconds. It was a welcome problem, though. He had gained too many points. He already knew he would get a small boost from fusing his last two Tao seeds, but that alone couldn't explain the growth. But he soon enough realized what was going on as he kept opening menus. The first thing he checked was the Tao menu. He had taken a quick look during the Battle Royale, but he hadn't had the time to properly look at the attributes at that time. Fragment of the Axe, early, all attributes, +10, strength, +110, dexterity, +80, endurance, +15, effectiveness of strength, +5%. Fragment of the Coffin, early, all attributes, +10, endurance, +80, vitality, +50, intelligence, +15, wisdom, +60, effectiveness of endurance, +5%. Fragment of the Bodhi, early, all attributes, +10, endurance, +60, vitality, +80, intelligence, +15, wisdom, +50, effectiveness of vitality, +5%. Gaining the fragment of the Bodhi was all thanks to the Prajna Cherry, and Zack wondered if the Zithaya had even known the true value of that thing, since Boje had considered it a soul-healing treasure. Then again, they did cherish it to the point that they weren't willing to part with it for money, so they probably knew that wasn't the limit of its capabilities. There wasn't a lot of change to his attributes as far as Zack could remember, with the fragment essentially